If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hey guys, a quick message before we start this week's episode. I want to share some details. I know there was for longtime listeners out there, there was a bit of a break that I took and going through some personal challenges, family related stuff, but as well as like physical challenges. I actually tore my meniscus and was basically immobile for a few weeks, up to a month. I'm still actually recovering from that. And so I needed to kind of concentrate on other things. At the same time, I just mentally was getting exhausted, focusing on actually pretty exciting things at the same time. More details on that, but my company, Godemix, is finally, discovering and developing our own IP. This is actually a very fun period for our company, and we were able to kind of focus on delivering something for GDC demo for Game Developer Conference that we went to San Francisco, got some very interesting talks with potential publishers that we're still engaged with. I think when time is right, I would definitely want to share with you guys and actually get your guys' thoughts. Other than that, finally backlogging these episodes so that they're going to be more routinely released on Tuesdays, 6 a.m. Pacific time. So for those hammering and wanting to find answers in this difficult period for game developers out there, I'm back, right? I also want to share like a huge move for those that are interested to go into our Discord. I'm thinking of starting to live stream a lot of these episodes. So for those who want an early preview or the kind of keyword of the year, early access, completely free, go ahead and join our Discord channel, and so that you can participate and watch and be part of the show, essentially in our Discord. Also, my primary output for anything beyond the Tuesday episodes has been on X, as well as Instagram. So Instagram will primarily focus on kind of like my fitness and recovery that I'm undergoing. If you want to understand or learn what I've been going through, this is actually a great time to go on Instagram, follow Game Dev Unchained without the E. So Game Dev Unchained, UNCHAIND, to kind of follow my journey on recovery and maybe pick up a few things on fitness that will help kind of bulletproof your body so that you don't have to go through what I go through. On an XX, or formerly known as Twitter, I share a lot of my opinions on current topics as well as post clips and episodes. And as usual, YouTube is a good resource for full episode with video for those who are just listeners, as well as short clips. The show is running on pure passion. So if you want to help, if you want to contribute, become a subscriber on Spotify. That is a great way to kind of support the show, as well as be a part of the show with extra perks, behind the scenes look to the show itself, but also extended interviews with the guests of each episode. All right, let's go right into the episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special guest, Francisco Laura Sikorsky, or Paco.
Yeah. Hi, Brandon. Nice to be here.
Nice to meet you, man. This is the part of the podcast where I ask our guests, which is yourself, to introduce yourself to the listeners and audience out there. Where you been? Where you at? Where you heading?
Sure. So I am Mexican. I was born here in Mexico. And my background, it's in marketing and advertising. I love, you know, advertising and all those kind of visual things. But life has, you know, moved me to the video game scene because I've enjoyed games since I was little. And then some of the brands that I used to work for, they said, hey, can we do some games on web? So by 2010, I started doing some web games, flash games in that time. That's how things have been shifting me to the today that we are, launching Lullaby of Life, that it's a PC and console game. So I'm very excited to see how this journey from web games to mobile, now all the way to Steam and PC.
Fantastic. Just kind of digging into the development team themselves. So how big is your team currently for shipping this game?
So the full team, we are around 16, 17, but the part of the team that worked on the Lullaby was around five or six, because we do have other projects, but we tend to have our projects with a team of around six.
So is this through a lot of a background of just developing many games? You guys found like that number five to six to create a new IP, to create a new project, is usually like the great good number.
I feel so. We as an indie developer, you know, it's easier to manage the team and you know the process when we're not a lot of people in it, because when you have more people, it's more, you know, the communication, it's difficult, and sometimes it's hard to lose control. So just having like one or two per area of the, you know, of the project, it's easier. I think that the biggest part of it has to be always development, right? To have two or three developers and then one or two artists and then the producer and all that. So yeah, I think that six, it's a good number.
So in the past, you guys have obviously, you were mentioning, you know, the journey of your team to eventually developing Lullaby of Life, going through mobile, now PC, and so that expansion, like what are the key differences developing for a smaller platform to a bigger, like for console and for Steam and things like that?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because yes, it is very difficult. You know, it's very different and there's different challenges there. I decided to start with mobile because that's something more manageable, you know, when you start. Since we used to do a lot of flash, and then that was easy to change into, you know, a video game, to a game, because flash websites were like a little bit interactive and all that. So to migrate to flash games was something that came very easy. And then to transition to mobile then has its challenges, right? To, you know, all this preparing everything for the stores, and if you have something to, you know, sell in the game, so in a purchases, advertising and all that. And then when you shift to PC or to, you know, to this consoles, oh man, that's, you know, that's a bigger kind of challenge where you need to have a lot of things to consider. And right now, like just reflecting on the phase of quality assurance, you know, all the bugs and the different things that you may encounter and, you know, that the possible users can may encounter with the game, it is a big challenge. So I believe that the path that we took from smaller kind of games and experience to bigger ones has been the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Before we dive into the project itself, I would love to kind of get more insight because the mobile market, the console market has always been, at least for developers, right? I always kind of share with our listeners out there that it really feels like it's two different developers. A lot of times there's not a lot of cross pollination, in terms of like people jumping from console to mobile to console. It's changing, but most of the time it's like a separate lane. Right. I wonder, like, over the years, you know, with your origination from the Flash to the mobile market, how has the mobile market evolved? Because we're starting to see a lot of AAA going into the mobile market, like PUBG or Warzone. And a lot of times I feel like they're kind of failing to see what the mobile market is about. You're sitting there waiting for like 20 minutes to download something and you still haven't played. It's like, what's going on? So I would love to kind of get your insight about what's going on there with more of these other developers getting to that space. And how it's changing. Sure. Yeah,
you know, that's a very good, reflection to make because, yes, mobile and PC or console were very different and were very far apart some time back, you know, some years ago. But now, you know, that bridge has been changing. And I remember that when we started doing mobile, you know, all this, as you said, you know, these AAA kind of games were just for PC or, you know, specific consoles. And for mobile was just this market with, these casual players, right? And maybe Candy Crush kind of things, right? That you just, you know, have people with smaller sessions and all that. But, you know, it has been changing a lot, and now it's difficult to consider what is mobile and what is, you know, PC or console, because you see even more games that are bigger and better produced and with better graphics on mobile because you have the capability, you know, and hardware. And then you go to consoles like Switch. When you compare it, you know, a Switch to maybe an iPhone 15 or a Samsung 24, whatever, and in hardware, it's even better sometimes, right? On those mobiles. So the bridge between hardware and the time you spend on the different devices has been changing, and it gives you a better opportunity to either have more casual stuff going to, you know, to consoles. Like I love playing like puzzles, and I have the Steam Deck, so I play Monument Valley on Steam Deck, right? And Monument Valley started in mobile, right? And then you have these big games are also in mobile because mobile can process again. They can handle this type of game. So I believe that it's a good challenge now that you can have this very in-depth games with a lot of visuals on mobile, and the sessions are longer. And you can stay there, but also you can bring more casual games to PC. And that's kind of the way we tend to be as a studio, that we attend to this market where this casual gamers and more, cozy kind of players and want to spend their time also on the PC or on the console.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
The for Lullaby Life, music is a big central theme to the game. Would you mind kind of talking about what inspired that idea?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I started, and this is just to give you a little bit of background. When I thought about making games, the main idea for me was to tell a story in an experience, right? And having this experience. I love movies. I love, you know, branding, as I said, and TV shows and all that. But with games, you have this interaction and this way of letting people decide which way they can go, right? And what they want to do. And of course, sound and music, it's a very important part of it, right? So for the Lullaby of Life, what we wanted is we wanted to make the sound an integral part of the experience of the game. So the mechanics and the way you experience the game depend on, of course, the sound that you're making and the combination of notes that you're doing for the puzzles, so you can progress on it. So since the very beginning of the idea of the game, we were in talks with this composer, and we talked about how the music will react on what the things you do on the game, and we have, you know, the soundtrack. But if you hear the soundtrack and you try to hear the same music in the game, you will see that the game or the music reflects how you're evolving inside the game. So that's something that we believe was very an integral part of it. And actually the way the music is done, it evolves through the levels. So we have 7 levels in the game, but the music from the first level is very different from the 7th level.
Do you mind kind of diving a little deeper about the process to design the music and sound effects, it being such a part of the game?
Yeah. So the game is based, it's puzzle based, right? And how you solve the puzzles is a combination of sound, timing, and where you're located, right? So you have this character called Bombo, that's this catalyst of life, and he has this different companions, and you need to click or interact, you know, with the different elements in a specific way with the sounds. So the main idea of the game and the core of the game is the beginning of life and the creation of life in the universe, right? So that's kind of the main idea. The question is, how did life, you know, came to be in the universe? So this kind of was our answer. So we think that maybe, you know, life came through a bunch of chain reactions of things, and those chain reactions started with the sound waves, right? That's the sound waves that you make. So these sounds, you know, are different from one another. So we have percussion sounds, we have, you know, this string-based sounds, and we have this air-based sounds. So with this combination of things, then you can evolve it evolves on the music, but it also evolves on the kind of puzzles that you need to solve.
It being such an integral part of the game itself, how did you ensure that it was a functional part of the gameplay? In terms of designing, like how did you guys go about brainstorming each of these levels to feature the progression of the music complexity, I guess, mm-hmm. as well as the player interaction with music?
Yeah, that was a challenge, you know, Brandon. Yeah, you're touching some specific details that it was challenging, because it's not just making sound and just, you know, it doesn't matter. We wanted to balance the game and you know, and the mechanics that you can see how the way you click on the sound, it makes sense, you know, that you hear them and they're harmonious, but also it becomes more challenging because you get more notes. Yeah. So let's say like we're in an instrument, maybe there's an instrument that has 1-2 notes, and then it starts getting difficult, like piano or something like that. It has a lot, an organ, right? It has a lot of notes. So that's kind of the way we wanted to see the game, right? Let's start with something that has just one note, and it helps you understand a little bit of, oh, okay, with this note, I can do this and I can do that. And then, oh, there's another note here. Okay, how they interact with each other, and how, you know, the pacing of waiting from one note to another, it helps on unlocking some of the things. So yes, it was a lot of trial and error. And what we wanted is to create a very curated experience, because all the levels are handmade, you know, a very precision made, and it involved a lot of timing and evolution and you know, making tweaks and changes on that, so it feels more, how can I say, like balanced and fluid, right?
Mm-hmm. Music for you obviously is a big part, it sounds like, of your life, your being, your personality. I'm not as well versed, I'm sure, but you know, growing up, I played instruments, went mm-hmm. through music programs myself, right? You may or may not be aware, you know, but school programs nowadays are more and more, or less and less, having the arts, especially mm-hmm. music programs. Like, mm-hmm. If I compare myself to my children's experience with music being part of their school program, it's almost non-existent. It's becoming mm-hmm. an extracurricular activity, which is for obvious reasons, it's a shame, because to me, it was a big part of my life, middle school, part of high school, just being around those types of people, right? But also just enjoying what I feel what you guys are doing, an expression of life in its core value, right, of being a person. I would love to kind of just hear kind of your thoughts about, you know, how things are changing, at least for that, right? Mm-hmm. The impact of music itself being a part of, like, what, you know, designing a game, and how you guys are seeing players or interacting with your game and seeing the thrill of music and correlating it with life itself. What are children missing nowadays, or young adults missing, without this way of how we thought about our perspective of life?
That
we experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree, Brandon. You know, it's times have been changing, and certain abilities or how can I say, or things that there were like a must to learn before have shifted, right? So now it's more, you know, on this digital devices and how you use technology better, right? And how you are more aware what information is real or what's not. So you need to have these different things now and these different tool sets. And the problem is that in order to make space for that, you need to take something off, right, in the curriculum. And those things sometimes are art and some extracurricular as it's planned. But I believe, and we've seen it with this game, because there's an insight here that's very important, is that when we started testing the game, we saw that a lot of kids love the game, and they stay in the game, and they don't need an explanation, any explanation about how to play the game and go through the game. And it helps them on reconnecting on this kind of different abilities that they have in their core, right? And we believe, you know, as a studio, and because this is something that came up as a team, that, you know, having these elements as sound and because the game is a very good combination, and we try to have a very good combination of sound, but also a lot of visuals, right? So a lot of elements evolve and change through the game, and we wanted to reflect that. And we've seen that kids are the ones that connect a lot of that. They say, oh yeah, you know, it's okay, this makes sense. I need to click here and then go here and do this kind of, you know, of this movements. And that helps them on the way they try to relate to that. So I do believe that music and and not even music, you know, the play on something that gives you a little of a mastery, like an instrument or a tool or maybe a craft. It's something that it's important to reconnect with also with all your body, right? Because sometimes now you just focus on maybe your eyes and your mind, and but you need to reconnect with, you know, all your parts of your body to be, how could I say, like, yeah, more connected to everything, right? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. Like, I think children or anyone who's approaching, I think that's why interactive medium is so great with everything, especially educational purposes. Like, it keeps kids engaged. I mean, I think you've probably seen this, but there's so many times where these like kind of experiments, you know, they have a kid planted in front of a TV and it's like 30 minutes of like educational information. And then they did, and you just see the kids like squirming around for those 2 hours, right? And then they put like Star Wars on and they just sit still for an hour. Like, games have like a way of like extending beyond just the movie medium, right? Their interaction allows children to participate in with the educational platform, and it could be very much the savior for all these extracurricular activities being cut from schools, right? It's like games might be our way of like trying to bring it back, and that's the one thing that really stood out when seeing your guys's game.
Thank you.
In terms of the development process for Lullaby Life, how did it differ from the other projects your team has worked on before?
So we tend to be a very how can I say, like, oriented on things, create something that we like, right? So things that we enjoy doing. As an indie, of course, an indie developer, we have the opportunity, right, to say, yeah, we wanted to work on this and we don't want to work on that. So we tend to always participate on game jams, you know, these events where you have 48 hours to create an idea of a game.
Yeah.
And we've participated several times. And in a specific year, we participated as a team, and the concept, because they always give you 48 hours and just a concept. Yeah. They just throw a word there, and with that word, you can go whatever you want. And that year, the concept was waves, right? So game jam concept waves. And that was the beginning of Lullaby of Life, right? So we started in a game jam, something that came very quickly to us, say, okay, we have waves. What is waves? We can go to the ocean, you can go to different things. And we say, okay, sound waves, right? And then sound, turn in, what can you do with sound? And as you've seen, we believe that sound is very important to everything. So sound waves, you can create live with sound, because it's energy and it's this vibration of things, right? That's kind of the concept and how it started. And then it evolved to the first, iterations of the game on how this sound wave started to bring life to different things. And then it got a mix between a lot of, you know, things that are, like chemistry or physics, but also metaphysics and energy. So this game is like a combination of the different aspects of we as a team, that we believe, you know, in science, yes, but we also believe in the untapped things that we don't know, and this, you know, in this energy that we can't see. So it's a mix of those things, you know, in this game. So it's kind of a weird way of how we evolve the idea of something that waves into something that we create life with chemistry and physics, but also with energy and things that we don't see, right?
Mm-hmm. What tools or technology do you guys use that was crucial in making the game? Did you guys experiment with new tools that you haven't used before in the project to make it possible, or do you guys relied on more things that have been tried and true and was more about execution?
Yeah. So yeah, we try to do both of those things. We work always with Unity. Unity has been our tool for several years now. So we feel confident on that tool. So the basis of the game is Unity, but what we did do is we create specific tools for the way we interact with sound. So we wanted to create the sound, and sound was very important. So as you progress on certain parts of the game and you select different things, the sound it reacts to that, right? When we started, it wasn't very common. Now we see several games that react on if you're in danger or if you're in a more specific area or whatever, the music it tends to change. But we wanted to make a combination of different parts of the same song that change. So the way a normal game is done is that, okay, we have this track that is for the normal part of the game. And then we change to this track when it's like danger, right? And then we change to this track when it's happy part, right? And we didn't want to take that approach. So we created a tool where the sound or the music it's divided by different parts of it. Mm-hmm. And then we turn on and off different parts of the same song. So that, or we change some of them. So it is the same bass song, but it changed the tone and the ambience of it. So that was kind of one of the tools that we explored on the game.
For a while, like there was a good stretch, especially in the 90s, early 2000s, right? Rhythm bass games were huge. I mean, everybody played Guitar Hero. Everyone played Rock Band, right? And then, for a little while, it stopped. Mm-hmm. But now we're starting to see a resurgence with, I guess, Fortnite Festival, mm-hmm. Fortnite concerts, especially when they bought Harmonix, that probably did a big boost. Right. And I'm beginning to see more and more people getting back to being interested in these. Not exactly, not sure how people feel about peripherals anymore, right?
Yeah.
But people are asking for this. I think, like, especially with Fortnite Festival, people are playing with their mouse and keyboards. Like, hey, are you guys going to start shipping out guitars again? People are asking for it. So I would love to kind of get your insight on that sector that you guys are in with rhythm, bass, music. You guys are more music targeted, right? No peripherals, but along that theme of music based games.
Yeah, I think that as you're saying, that type of game is trending. It's starting to trend a little bit more. It does help that this kind of big brands and these big games like as Fortnite and all that, they're bringing that back and they're integrating that. But I think that that's something that it's very familiar and common on this type of games and experiences, because sound has been it always has been important, to everything, right? So music is a very important industry, and sound is what makes a difference of a lot of stuff, right? You don't experience the things the same way without sound or without sound effects, and when you have them, that's why movies in space, they put sounds in explosions and something like that when there isn't any sound, right? But you need to hear it, right? So we are not a very, as a studio, we don't tend to be a rhythm-based kind of game studio, but we do believe that sound and music, it's a core value of a game, right? It's not something that, we did this game and then we just, bought some tracks and put it on and all that. We don't have the budget, maybe to have this orchestra, do all the things that we wanted, but I'm a very big fan of Christopher Nolan, and his movies like Inception or Interstellar and all those movies, even Oppenheimer, the latest one, that if we try to see like who are the key players of a movie like Oppenheimer or Inception or whatever, sound or music is one of them. And I'm reaching here on the limb and saying not even music sometimes, but the sound effects, right? And the sound mixing. So we do tend to have games that sound mixing and sound effects are very important to it. Yes, sometimes like this game puzzle, and we wanted to have this rhythm-based puzzles, but for the other projects, it might not be something rhythm-based, but sound will be a very important part of it. Yeah.
So being an indie developer, there's always challenges to the beginning process, right? The concept process can be challenging, but fun. But the one that is usually still mysterious, even when like an experienced team like yourself went through it many times, is the funding part, finding a publisher, self-publishing. How was that this time? Did you guys end up going with the publisher? Did you guys consider self-publishing? What options were you guys looking at that stage? Do you guys went with a familiar partner from before?
You touched a very delicate point, right? Funding. Yeah. It's and this year, you know, last year and this year has been the topic, you know, of the industry, you know, getting funds, and a lot of indies have been having problems with that and all that. So let me tell you a little bit about the story of this game. This game has been evolving. So we had this idea of a game, and we had some concept of it and did a prototype. And then it got picked by Apple Arcade, right? Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate enough to partner with Apple in their program in Apple Arcade. So we had a version of the Lullaby of Life there, and it stayed there. And we learned a lot with the, you know, what with the users there and all that. And then when we finished the exclusivity with them, we decided that we wanted to evolve the game. Better visuals, better experience on some of the mechanics, and a little bit longer levels and puzzles and all that. So we started doing that with some budget that we had, but we were looking for, you know, of course, funds to port and to, you know, take to other places the game. And we were fortunate enough to find Midwest, and we didn't know about them before. But it was luckily that their motto is, you know, great games come from anywhere. And we are in a part of the world that sometimes it's hard to get financed, right? And some to get support. Mexico is very, you know, it's you know, it's side by side to the US, but the conditions on how we get support or funding are very different, right? So it's hard to get funding here. And finding partners that believe and you know, on this markets like us and that games come from different parts of the world, it made us, you know, have a good partner with them. And yes, we did partner with them to publish this and to port it. But it was also good that we already had a very strong product that was, you know, already tested, and we could, you know, bring to other platforms and try to have a very good success also.
Right. One of the like hottest topic now with game developers from all sides, from indie to AAA, is the idea of early access, right? For you guys, you kind of got your early access by releasing it on Apple Arcade. I would love to kind of dive deeper into the user feedback, but let me finish my question. Like this idea that a lot of games are more and more open to involving players to their road of version 1.0, right? For many listeners, they probably know, but companies were kind of in charge of hiring their own QA department, right? Just hiring a number of people to test their game 24/7. But now it's becoming more and more open to the just number one true fans, essentially, like early adopters. To be constantly there with the developers and essentially be a part of the game they enjoy, but also be a part of telling the developers what they enjoy or why they don't enjoy it, right? So you kind of talked a bit about that process after releasing it on the App Store. Can you kind of dive a little deeper? Like what kind of user testing feedback did you got? What tools did you guys use for that? Was it like more from integrated review system or with iOS, right? How exactly did you guys get that feedback, and what kind of feedbacks were you guys getting to adjust for this version of Lullaby of Life?
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, times have been changing a lot, and early access is it's something that it's more open to, and people are take this in a very positive kind of way. I think that it changed because a lot of people were mad about, you know, launches that didn't feel complete. I know that one of those, you know, one of the biggest ones that I can remember is Cyberpunk, right? And yeah. So, well, there's this big, huge expectations of this game. I have very huge expectations of the game. And it's launched and you feel like, what's going on, right? What's going on here, right? And if we shift just the mindset and say, well, we have this big, big game, you know, and people understand, you know, that games take a lot of time. You know, it's a long period of time to build that and a lot of money. So if you just shift the way that you sell that idea and say, well, this isn't the finished product, this is an early access, but I want you to help me make it the best possible project, then that shift of mind, it totally makes a big change on how people see it, right? And I see that early access has been gaining attraction because of that. You know, we have this idea of this big game that has a lot of stuff in it, and we need you to help make it better. And as you said, you know, where people are engaged with the game, they're open to give you suggestions and help you improve it. And even they help you find more bugs and more things that break the game that you could ever find, you know. And for us, you know, for us now specifically for Lullaby of Life and this journey that we had from Apple Arcade to where we are right now. Yes, it did help us, as you said, as an early access, you know, because we had a specific amount of people that were on the platform that gave us feedback on the game. The way that we received that on that specifically was on review based. Yeah, it was review based. You know, hey, I had problem this, or they contact us directly on our contact platform and say, well, I have problems with this, or I want to make these changes. And that's where we learned, you know, about that a lot of kids enjoy the game, right? And there were even parents that they were contacting now saying, hey, you know, my kid love it and he's learning a lot on different things, like, you know, be more on how to use the controller and all that kind of things. But it also helped us on evolving the user experience. So it did help us in early access. We didn't do it like that, but yes, I believe that right now, if we see it as you know, as a step back on that, it did help having that first, you know, iteration in Apple Arcade that helped us as an early access stage to have a better product right now that we're launching.
Mm-hmm. For developers out there, like one of the biggest things among many things, right? You kind of mentioned it before. Last year, this year is probably the toughest period for any game developer from all over the world. Doesn't matter where you're at. It's like, I've never seen it like this, where month after month, there seems to be like this endless amount of layoffs, game developers back into the market. There's just seems to be like an impossible, unbalance of people who are finding jobs and the jobs that are available. And even if somehow we are able to kind of find all these jobs again, like it seems to be a real challenge. Like what is your, just as a developer, as a fan of the industry, a fan of games, what are your thoughts about what's going on right now? Just, you know, your overall perspective.
Yeah, I feel you, Brandon. You know, I feel you because I'm in one of the receiving ends here. You know, part of the team and leaders of a team. You know, that it has, you know, in this industry, has been tough. before we had more projects, and you know, we had some possibilities of investment that didn't close last year, and that, you know, that didn't help a lot, and we have been struggling. But my take on this is, this is my personal opinion, is that the industry grew and grew and grew, you know, a lot, and it got more expensive each time. Yeah. I believe that this is a reflection of what happened also with companies like Facebook or now Meta, right? And Microsoft and Amazon and all that they grew so much, and they paid each time more and more because they were competing, because the artists or the developers, it's hard to find the good ones, right? So how you compete with money, right? But then you turn this industry to a very expensive industry, right? And I feel that happened a little bit also in this, you know, in games. You know, you're trying to get the best team possible. How do you do that? You pay more, or you give more incentives, so your company becomes a more expensive company. So you need to earn more. And the problem is that the profits and the way, you know, how you are, maybe growing on the earnings are not the same reflection as before, because you have more expenses and you're fighting with more competition. It's a combination of a lot of stuff. So my guess is that most of these big companies, or, you know, and these big layoffs that we're seeing is just a restructure because they're too expensive now, right? So they need to change the way they conduct business to be more profitable again. And then, yes, I think that it's making two things. Yes, a lot of people are without jobs, but they're creating new type of opportunities with indies maybe and new partnerships, but also try to have an industry that it's more based on quality and not just, you know, I'll give you the most I can on money and not on the idea of the project that we're creating. I don't know if that makes sense, Brandon.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I think I mentioned it many times to the listeners out there that I felt like there were a couple of things. I mean, we just, the result of this past 2 years was directly, you know, tied to the previous 2 years, the COVID period, totally. Right? So yeah. I totally agree. There was like definitely an inflation of salaries, and the remote work is disruptive. And it's hard for me to say that because, you know, I feel remote work does amazing things for a lot of developers. I mean, it helped kind of keep developers not have to move to these very expensive hubs, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, these game companies are in concentrated areas, at least in America. And they're usually around very expensive cities. At that time, you know, before COVID, the salaries, you know, game dev salaries are nothing like tech salaries, right? Yeah, but we're going to the same, you know, lunch area and dinners. And we live in the same area, right? But remote definitely helps with that, you know, allowing you to live wherever you want, near family and friends, have that support system. So in case things happen, you don't have to uproot your family, which is what I personally went through. I moved so many times, chasing really good jobs. I mean, that's usually how it works, right? You want the really good job, you got to move there. And a lot of times it's still the same problems. It's like, game industry can be risky. You know, one day they need you, the next day they don't. And then you're stuck in a very expensive city, right? So I think in that way, it solved that problem. However, with remote, it presented new problems. It's like, what are the good workers versus the bad workers, you know? And I hate to say it, but not, I think a majority are bad workers remotely. It's just, how do you manage your time? You know, how do you divide from family and work, right? You're essentially in the same room. Some people are working out at a living room. It's like, that's not going to work. Right. It's like, so it forced it a lot of, it was a disruption. And we saw the results of that. I think games were being delayed. Games were not being shipped on time. Schedules were being pushed back. Middle managers getting worse at middle managing. During that period, we recorded a lot of episodes, and I was hearing stories like people were monitoring Slack, like those little when the light goes from idle to green. But like producers were instructed to, as soon as that light goes to idle during core hours, immediately penalize or like reprimand that worker for stepping away from the computer. But obviously that's a bad way to go about it, but there was at the very core of it a problem where people weren't working 8 hours a day, let's say, right? And so I think, all those problems hit a breaking point. And it's the sucky issue with that is like, all, it's not like the game companies or game industry went down. Like we're more profitable this year than last year. I mean, what's sad is that as soon as like Microsoft like lays off 10,000 people, right? Like 2 weeks later, they're like record-breaking year, so we keep seeing that. And they just say, a lot of companies unfortunately use this as an excuse to just get rid of people that they were planning to get rid of 2 years from now. But it was a perfect time to do it because, it's not going to be as public or bad press, right? Because everyone's doing it. So I felt like a lot of companies, and in combination, a lot of different factors, use this period as an excuse to get rid of people based on various things. It's like, I don't like how he looks at me, right? This is a perfect time to do it. Things like that. It's a perfect time to get rid of that guy without, any backlash. So I completely agree with you. It is a restructuring. It sucks, but I do feel that it was one of those necessary things. Like COVID was, it got silly. It got too ridiculous with the growth that we had. People hiring at ridiculous salaries, and it's like, we're not making that much more money, guys. It's like, to justify that. And in that period, it was hard to hire people because it was, even though there was, because talent was the commodity, it was a seller's market, right? As in, like, the workers are all super, they know their worth. They're like, I'm super important, I can work from home, all these companies are coming after me. So when we were hiring people for my company, we had these ridiculous salary demands. I was like, I don't think so. It's like, what are you, 2 year experience, you want this much? It's like, so it became a problem as at least from my perspective as a leader hiring for my company. So I saw like, this is not going to last essentially, because it wasn't 50-50. There was no compromise. But it was great to kind of hear your side of things because, I was kind of like in my bubble over here in primarily California, but I have a lot of friends in the States, and I was kind of hearing things like that. But to kind of hear, all over the world, it's kind of having similar issues.
Totally
is a problem. The game industry has always been growing. We talked about the mobile market, the PC market for Lullaby of Life, and how now it's like the bridge is easier, for either to kind of transfer port over, right? Where do you see, and maybe this kind of touch on like future technology, but like, I guess the Apple Vision is still testing, right? It hasn't really, of an Apple product, right? Compared to other Apple product, it's kind of failing right now, pretty big time, right?
I feel the same way.
I would love to kind of hear your thoughts about, in terms of technology for games, right? Is it going to remain the same a little while, or you think something else is going to pop along to become another port option, essentially?
I feel that it will happen, as you just said something very important, you know, and a few questions back about this rhythm-based games, right? That people don't, there's a niche of people that want the guitar back.
Yeah.
But most of us won't buy it, right? Yeah. It's, you know, having another guitar that I just use it for this game or this, you know, instrument that it's just for this thing. It's more space, more, you know, money, more, you know, it's difficult. And I feel the same way about VR in general, you know, in gaming. You know, there have been a lot of people that say, hey, you want to explore VR gaming? And there's some funds for VR gaming, and there are some opportunities for VR gaming. Me, myself, I haven't, you know, wrapped around on the idea of, yes, let's explore that, because I believe that it's not mature yet and it's very risky. And you depend on a lot of peripherals, you know, as you said, you know, a lot of things that are very expensive, that are not very practical. And, you know, it's not the best experience, in my opinion, right now, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that the way to go, the way that I see it, is that it will continue the way it is, but it might change on that it passes a little bit more, you know, these games that are more available maybe on tablets, and, you know, the Steam Deck and Legion Go and all those kind of things are gonna, I believe that will continue trending, because that's kind of a little bit more approachable for my side, for my taste, you know. It's because if you think about it, you know, if you are going to plane or you're going to go someplace else, it's easier to bring a, you know, a Steam Deck or whatever than, you know, the Apple Vision, and just for a bunch of, you know, 3-4 games, and we have the other things, you can do a bunch of things, right? So I'm not too keen, you know, on the future, on the near future, you know, of VR kind of gaming, but yes, on the bridge of mobile, on, you know, more and more AAA will be more mobile. Let's say that, right? Let's not just say on smartphones, but on devices that feel more mobile now. Yeah.
Yeah. I am a huge fan of the Steam Deck. I have one myself. I was one of the first people that bought that. Nice. Finally got a dock for it, so I can connect my TV in it to make it like basically a Switch. But I'm always surprised how Valve, I mean, they're doing well still with it, but they don't really push the advertising. I was like, man, this should be, everyone should have a Steam Deck.
Yes,
if you have a Steam library, you should have a Steam Deck. I have like games for 15 years that is building still. And just what other system has that? Except if you, what other system has that anymore? Like even if you get an Xbox Game Pass or a PlayStation Pass, I mean, those are cloud based games, those aren't yours, right?
Yeah.
Once you stop the server, it's gone. The Steam is the only thing left that saves like a digital library of your games.
Yeah.
But they don't advertise. They don't push it. It's there if you want it. Yeah, it's weird.
But it's funny, you know, I think that's the way of Valve. I believe that they have so much opportunities that they don't push it beyond that.
Yeah.
And I'm just, because I'm a fan of Valve and, you know, Steam and all the, what they're doing and the Steam Deck, but I feel the same way as you, Brandon, you know, that, oh, they can be doing so much more, right? But maybe they're just, they don't want to make so much noise. Maybe they have, I don't know, you know, I don't know, but they're doing very well.
They're doing very well. And maybe that's why they don't overdo it.
Yeah.
They don't under deliver, you know, they're just, it's like their philosophy with Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike was here 20 years ago. It's still here.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's like you can still play it and it looks great. Counter-Strike 2 looks freaking awesome. I do have one last question for you, and this is more for the aspiring developers out there. Sure. What advice do you have for those that are interested to integrate like unique themes like music into their own games, for those who are interested.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So my main advice that I always try to give to, you know, aspiring developers is that I believe that we as developers, we always, or most of us that we are, you know, on the trenches and we're making the games, we started by passion, right? Not business side. We do it because of passion. You know, I love this game. I remember when I was playing Mario 64 and I want to make that experience to new players, whatever, right? And so you start with passion. And the problem is that your passion, then it turns into, oh, I have to be a biz dev kind of guy, or, you know, treat some other things. And my advice is always to embrace that part, right? Embrace that you need to level your passion with with the business savvy and when being professional, and to balance that, or to have, you know, like these partners in your studio that have these different approaches, because that will leave you more time to explore on this passion that you have, right? So if it sounds like us with Lullaby of Life, we took our time on, okay, let's explore the sound, let's do this, let's explore how did the universe started and why is this, you know, the periodic table like this and whatever. And we took that time, but at the same time that people had to do that, there were other parts of the team that needed to do the business side of the project, right? So my advice is that you need to leverage this passion that you have and this exploration, but not to overtake that on the business side and the timing. And you need to be profitable. You need to be on time, and to balance those two things, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Pac, it was great talking with you. This actually marks our 1 hour. Congratulations, you made it through. Hopefully it was yes. as enjoyable for you as it was for me. This is the part of the podcast where I actually shut up and hand the mic over to you to promote, give attention to directly to the listeners and viewers out there about anything you want to talk about.
Thank you. Thank you, Brent. So, yeah, I wanted just to invite everybody to, you know, check out The Lullaby of Life. It's our newest game, the Here in One Simple Game. And as I said, you know, it's a puzzle exploration game. It's very, very, very unique. It's very different from what you've seen. 7 level long. It's available since the 30th of April on Steam, Epic, and GOG. And it will be soon available also in Switch and Xbox. So go check that out or wishlist it now. And of course, please send us your feedback and whatever you feel about the game and your thoughts, so we can consider that also on new projects. But yeah, thank you, Brandon, you know, also for your time. It was great being here, you know, talking to you and just being out there, you know, with all your listeners. And hopefully we can meet again in the future.
Definitely. That is it. See you guys all next week.